All right. We're almost done with summer, bro.
No, we're not. It's Houston, dude. Summer lasts till October.
It's true. But technically, it's August 6th. So as far as things go, we're coasting through the end of the summer. Hopefully going to hit that cold snap in September sometime and have everything nice and cool for the Halloween show on the 29th.
I think the worst, harken back to hot Octobers, I remember my son one year, the worst one I had was he had me dressed up like Chewbacca.
Oh, no.
He was Darth Vader. And I was Chewbacca in handcuffs. And it was hot. It was really, really hot.
The way you can never really tell. So me and a bunch of friends used to go to Ren Fair, and we'd dress up and go wander around and, you know, just... And, so my costume I had actually sewn, like this long vest. It was kind of like a tunic that tied with a belt and kind of flared out at the knees. And, you know, had a sword, and it was just kind of a, I don't know, you call it an elf costume or whatever. And if it was cold, I had a cape that went with it. I could tie on this cape, and it, you know, kind of went over and kept me warm. But if it was hot, I could take it off and roll up my sleeves, and then it was just normal. So we're planning, and my buddy Chris, at the time, he doesn't have costume. And so my sister should have been a makeup effects person, and, you know, she, it's like the night before we're going to go, and it's warm. It's kind of balmy out. We check the weather. Of course, this is before the internet, so you can't see stuff coming. You check the weather. It's supposed to be in, like, the high 70s, you know, low 80s. So they go to Walmart, like the late-night Walmart, and they come back with a pair of jeans, and she cuts it into ribbons. So this guy, she drew woodland stuff on him, so like leaves and stuff. So he was supposed to be like a wood nymph sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So he's got no shirt. He's got jeans that are shredded. Overnight, cold front comes through, drops it into like the 50s. And so he's out there turning blue. I got my cape on. I'm like,
enjoying life, drinking mead.
But yeah, here you can never know. You can't plan a costume.
Right.
Feel sorry for those cosplayers that are like
dressed in layers, man.
Yeah. Like I said, it's August 6th. This is episode 95 of the Scary Dad Podcast. And we are going to continue kind of our summer series. We did summer movies. We did summer vacation. And now we're going to do some summer reading. You still got some time to pack away some books if you're...
when you're going to be on the beach.
Yep. So we're going to talk about some great summer reading and some books and some authors and, you know, just different things that you can do to pass the time in your dog days leading into the fall before it starts getting into Halloween season. First,
the old business.
On this date in 1926 in New York City, the Warner Brothers Vitaphone system premieres with the movie Don Juan, starring John Barrymore. We're out of the silent age. We're into the talkies now. Now, last week we talked about Jimmy Hoffa disappearing. We also talked about some Masonic stuff, and, you know, just like there's some stuff behind the scenes that happens.
Right.
On this date in 1930, Judge Joseph Force Crater steps into a taxi in New York and is never seen again. He just disappears. He is apparently trying to fight mafia corruption.
Okay.
And,
he's somewhere along with Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah. They're probably playing cards somewhere. Of course, Jimmy Hoffa disappeared in the 70s. This was in 26. Or in 30, sorry. Also, last week, we talked about, on that date, last week, the USS Indianapolis was sunk. Mm-hmm. I believe the week before that, the Indianapolis left port to deliver the parts for the atom bomb.
The bomb.
The bomb. And on this date in 1945, in World War II, Hiroshima, Japan is devastated when the atom bomb Little Boy is dropped by the United States B-29 Enola Gay. Around 70,000 people are killed instantly, and some tens of thousands die in subsequent years from burns and radiation poisoning.
It was so bad, it was never to be done again since.
Until like 2 weeks later.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was like, well, wait a second.
But just that particular war, it was, mm-hmm. people saw the devastation of it and realized, damn.
Well, it's so weird, too, because, you know, the atom bomb is horrible. And what makes the atom bomb as bad as it is just that a single detonation can do that much destruction. Mm-hmm. But there are conventional bombings, like the bombing of Dresden and the bombing of Tokyo, that killed far more people in just carpet bombing than the atom bomb did. It's just the difference is the atom bomb did it in one shot.
Yep.
On this date in 1996, the Ramones played their final concert at the Palace in Los Angeles, California. And on this date in 1996, NASA announced that the ALH-84001 meteorite, thought to originate from Mars, contains evidence of primitive life forms. So, are we alone out there? Let's talk about it. We've talked about it before.
Well, in my opinion, theoretically, there's no way we are alone.
Couldn't possibly happen.
You're looking at infinite space. Infinity is a cycle. It's a circle. It's got to repeat itself. There's other life out there somewhere.
There's other life, whether we'll find them or not.
Yeah, that's another story.
On this date in 1911, Lucille Ball was born. Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
As a child, that was a staple to watch all the damn time.
Man, my parents, my grandmother, everybody loved Lucy. All right. On this date in 1917, Robert Mitchum. So many movies.
Yep.
He got busted early on for smoking pot. Then he made a career of movies. And then later on, late in his career, he's like, yeah, you know, they said that smoking pot was going to ruin my career. It's not. 1934, author Piers Anthony. A lot of science fiction, great books. 1969, singer-songwriter Elliott Smith. Are you familiar with him?
Then probably so, but...
is pretty popular, like, late 90s, early 2000s. He died in 2003. He was very bleak, very pretty, very harmonic. He did the soundtrack for Good Will Hunting.
Okay.
I think he won an Academy Award for, if not the whole soundtrack, at least one of the songs. But this dude stabbed himself in the heart twice.
Oh, wow.
Imagine how hard and how determined that
no
would be.
No shit.
Yeah. Stabbed himself once, didn't go through as deep as he wanted, so he did it again.
Jesus.
That's the way he took himself out.
This got conspiracy written all over it.
Yeah. Well, his girlfriend, he was, like, freaking out, and he left, and she went to try to go find help, and when they came back, so there's always been that.
Yeah.
But... and in 1970, M. Night Shyamalan was born. What a twist. Hey, man, he's done some good work.
Yeah, no, I watched Unbreakable the other day again, which I enjoy that movie a lot.
The only problem with that movie is there should have been about half an hour shorter.
Yeah,
there's a lot of,
it dragged it out a lot.
There's a lot of just like really slow scenes of nothing going on.
Yeah, but it's still a good movie. I love Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis can't be beat, so...
Also on this date in 1976, Soleil Moon Frye, Punky Brewster.
Yep.
They had to end her show because her boobs got too big.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
I know.
Can you imagine the meeting?
Well, Ms. Frye, I'm afraid we got to do away with your character. You're getting too sexy.
She's got too... too much on top. All right, let's see here. Notable deaths. on this date in 2004, we lost Rick James, bitch. And on this date in 2009, director John Hughes went to the big teenage comedy in the sky. And that is it for old business.
All righty.
Take a break. We'll come back. Discuss something new.
My name is Matthew Finnis, and something terrible has happened to me. An event that has sent me traveling down a road I was never meant to be on. This is my story, and the story of countless others. This is a story of what lies in the shadows of Morston, Texas.
Siren Aside is a serialized horror drama based in the wicked world woven in and around Morston, Texas. The criminal factions and dark government agencies are just the start of the malevolence that roams the streets of this macabre city. The tales in Siren Aside tap into the fear and lore that envelop what most would consider to be fiction.
How much more is out there? Is every monster real?
Most tales are based on some fact.
The production plays host to a plethora of popular personalities from other nightmarish podcasts.
Oh, it's Lena. Lena Klein.
Just a number now. That's it. 447.
I bet you believe in yellow eyes now, huh, boy?
Thanks to the research team here at the Laughlin Institute, we have finally found the answer to beating disease entirely.
What have I done? Kate, help me, please.
That's not me. His body is accepting death.
Evil has reigned unchecked in this city for far too long.
The main cast of Siren Aside's creepy, courageous, and curious characters evolve with the overarching story, but they also chronicle some amazing self-contained, standalone tales.
It's vile. Eddie, vile.
Reporting live, I'm Margaret Sharp. Back to you, Dave.
An operating theater. Well, more of a stage to showcase our talents to our clients.
Look at me, please. We'll climb this mountain together.
The original music serves the episode's atmosphere in a way that embraces and enhances each scene. So uncover the dark secrets, evil murders, supernatural experiences, and mysterious doctors awaiting in this modern epic. Binge the show for free right now on your favorite podcast platform or at sirenaside.com.
Here we are again.
You sound so excited, dude.
I'm good to go. No worries. So we got our laser disc playing in the background.
I was gonna say that's not as high quality as they used to advertise it as.
No. fortunately, I got it rigged up through a coax right now, so it's not, the reception's not very good. But I got a workable laser disc player and a nice laser disc collection. So we're watching Stuff Stephanie and the Incinerator by Trauma Enterprises.
Nice.
Which is actually a very hard to find laser disc, just so you know.
So I was just out of high school, I guess. I had been working at Radio Shack, and I got an offer from a guy who opened up an independent phone store. So he was probably one of the first, like, standalone cell phone stores in the city. And it was a pretty abysmal job. It was not fun. You know, you think, oh, that's kind of key. It was not. But it had its moments. But next door, there was kind of a high-end video store, and they specialized in Laserdisc.
Okay.
And so it's kind of, I kind of have a inward smile whenever I see Laserdiscs or hear about it, because man, people come from far and wide, and it's just like they were spending, God, I think a couple of their machines were like close to $1,000 for a Laserdisc player back then.
Think about at the time, I got one Laserdisc over there where it, the sticker price originally was $25.
Mm-hmm.
It was expensive, dude.
That was some money to pay for. VHSs were like $80-$90. Yeah. Like if you messed them up from Blockbuster, they'd charge you like $80-$90.
It wasn't like the library.
I'll go to Goodwill and find them still wrapped in plastic with a $25 price tag on them, or $19.99.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sure I spent $20 on a VHS at some point, but man.
Make sure you bring that thing back. Alrighty, moving on, let's get into...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
We love our mutant animals, you know that. Recently in Brazil, a cow with two heads was born. Totally shocking local farmers. Video is out there of the animal being bottle fed by local workers. Has two identical faces between the two. The calf has two pair of eyes and heads between one skull. It was found in the Brazilian town of Caiponia by the farmer's wife that owns it. She says, I never imagined something like that would be born here. We were very surprised. The vet said they need to either put the calf down or they're going to have to bottle feed him and look after him until he dies. So they've been bottle feeding it. And you can see it's pretty, it's just insane looking.
Man, that's bizarre.
Yeah. The two-headed cow. There's just two-headed animals pop up. The ones that really freak me out are like the goats and the sheep that are born with human faces.
Yeah.
Those are just the stuff of nightmares, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a little bit of movie news. For Star Wars Episode 9, doesn't that just sound like they're dragging it out way too long?
Well, it's that trilogy thing.
Yeah.
You know, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. Well, it's been announced that Billy Dee Williams will be returning as Lando for Episode 9.
You know, I saw that, and it was all over Twitter, and it was huge news, and I'm thinking, like...
It makes sense.
Well, it makes sense, but what else has he done since Empire?
Billy Dee hasn't done much of anything.
He hasn't done much. I mean, he was in The Ladies' Man.
Well, he was in Return of the Jedi, too, but...
Well, true. He was in Jedi. But he was in Ladies' Man. But he hasn't really done much. So, you know, if...
But lately, he's voiced characters in Robot Chicken, Family Guy episodes dedicated to Star Wars, and a Lego movie. That's pretty much what he's done since then.
You know, I think it's... Obviously, it's bigger news that Harrison Ford wanted to do it, or, you know...
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to de-age him. Smooth out his lines and everything. Okay, Jason Blum has come out in a recent interview and said he prefers the... new Halloween movie not be referred to as a reboot, but as a reinvention. According to him, the way to get people interested is to not reboot. The term makes my hair stand up on the back of my neck. What we're doing with Halloween is, I guess I'll use the term reinvention. Reboot sounds so corporate. The way we attacked Halloween was to go after what we've done with a lot of other movies. David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are not known for horror. At the same time, Jordan Peele was not known for horror before Get Out. So I think we've had a lot of success missing genres of people. The movie is going to be a straight scary movie, though. So,
good.
Yeah, he's looking at it as...
That's all I ask.
Yeah.
That's
what you said on the podcast when we talked about it.
just
wanted to be scary.
Yeah.
Speaking of scary, have you seen the trailer for Tales from the Hood 2?
I haven't.
It's awesome.
Is it?
I can't wait for it to come out. I don't know if you remember the original Tales from the Hood. Wait, this is the wrong one. I don't want it. Where is my other one? The original Tales from the Hood had Clarence. What was Clarence's last name? I'm trying to remember. The funeral director in it. He's not going to be in it this time. They have replaced him. If you give me 1 second, I will find it. There we go. They have replaced... Clarence Williams III was the person that... this ain't no funeral home, neither. He's been replaced by Keith David of They Live and The Thing fame. Okay. Which I think is awesome. He's an awesome actor.
Yeah, he is great.
So he'll be the one that will be narrating between the four tales. The dolls are coming back. They're going to be making another appearance. Looking at the trailer, you're looking at demonic dolls, possessed psychics, vengeful vixens, and historical ghosts. So the trailer looks pretty good. It's the original director and writer, Rusty Cundiff, is going to be involved with it. So that is going to be released on Blu-ray, DVD, digital, and on-demand platforms October 2nd of this year. So
awesome.
We got that to look forward to. So Tales from the Hood was just, it was awesome.
So you heard awesome about the new, God damn it, what's the name of the movie with all the dolls? Puppet Master.
Yes.
You heard good things about it?
I've heard a couple good things about it.
It's really gory and really scary, actually.
Yeah. The new special effects have really stepped up the game and refreshing the franchise. So it was getting stale there for a while. I mean, there's 9 Puppet Master movies before this.
Yeah.
So it can't help but get a little bit stale, and this one apparently has really stepped it up. Okay, the latest cast member announced for the Spawn reboot. Have you heard?
Jeremy Renner
is going to be playing Twitch, one of the two detectives that are going to be the main focus of this particular Spawn movie. I can't say I'm excited.
So apparently the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, remember, he was one of the he's one of the bad guys. He's the one that's like in the previews where Star-Lord's like, "I'm Star-Lord," and the guy's like, "Who?" He was a black guy.
Yeah.
He's being either considered or has already been cast for a role in something else, like it's not Captain Marvel, but it's just like, dude, the Rolodex only has like 6 people in it. We've mentioned it before. It's like Jared Leto is apparently going to be in...
Keep talking. I got to go flip the laser disc.
All right.
So we can get the movie back on.
But Jared Leto is going to be in another, DC movie or something. Anyway, it's like, oh, you know, producer in Hollywood. It's like, oh, we've got an idea. You know, who do we want to play? It's like Jared Leto. Like, but Jared Leto. But it's a 6-year-old girl. Okay, fine. 6-year-old girl goes to Jared Leto. Who's going to play her 2-year-old brother? Jeremy Renner. Or Idris Elba. Or, you know, like one of the 5 people that just keeps being in the same...
Recycled over and over
again. Same people over and over and over again. It's like... I don't dislike any of these people, but Jesus, there's got to be more than like 5 people that are playing superhero movies. Let's get some new folks.
Yeah, there's tons of actors out there.
Again, because, you know, again, I think we talked about it a couple of times. You know, it's like Captain America was Johnny Storm, and Killmonger was also Johnny Storm. It's like you just have the same folks playing in all of these different movies. It's pretty incestuous. I mean, they must have the same agent. Like, all of them have the same agent. But whatever, I'll watch it.
They look at who's the biggest box office draw and want to try it and think that if they use somebody established, it's going to history's going to repeat itself. I guess you could say. I think that has a lot to do with it. Todd McFarlane has said, as a first time director, he wanted to surround himself with the most talent, most skilled people he could find. Lucky enough to land Jason Blum and then Jamie Foxx, and I knew the person on screen the most was this police officer named Twitch. We needed a stronger person as possible because he would be the face of the film. And he said he wanted to start at the top and work his way down, and Jeremy Renner was at the top of his list. So, I trust McFarlane. I'm looking forward to it and see what he does with it. To me, just from the comic books, the character Twitch was kind of a goofy-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how the handsome, swarmy Jeremy Renner is going to be able to pull that off. But we shall see.
I don't think that matters much. It's just more of the having the same people play interchangeable roles in superhero movies. So, but I guess in comics they do that all the time, though. So it's okay. You know, you have different writers, different artists painting different characters and making new ones up. And, you know, I watched this documentary the other night, speaking of McFarlane. It was a documentary talking about how, like, the Image, how they broke free from Marvel in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so they had, you know, it was McFarlane, Liefeld, Portacio, Jim Lee, a couple other guys. And they all basically, like, they of their top 25 books, they were in the top 12. Those artists were, like, their top guys. But think of this as balls, dude. So they went to Marvel and they're like, we're quitting to leave our own company. And Marvel's like, but then they had an appointment with DC down the road. So all these, like, seven guys walk into DC, and DC just thinks they hit pay dirt because they're taking all of that talent from Marvel. And they walk in there and, like, we're not working for you either. And DC is just like, what the hell? Like, what did we do? Like, we didn't do nothing. Like, but then Jim Lee was the first one to break ranks. He sold his, I guess his title was, his label was Wildstorm, and he sold it to DC, like, within a year or so. Cashed out for a lot of money, but got out before the fallout.
Before it dropped, right.
So Jim Lee's probably been the most, well, other than McFarlane, who's been independent the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was funny to watch. Like, they were all just like, they're all kids, dude. They're all like 22, 25, you know, just like taking on the giants.
Let's go rub it in their face.
Yeah, let's go across the street and rub it in DC's face. Like, why would you do that? You know? But I think Jim Lee's the only one that's like, he's worked for Marvel and DC since.
Yeah.
You know, so he mended fences.
Yeah. Okay. Add a little humor to our new business. This next story is about a British Columbia pork ranger who looks a lot like a young John Cleese. Doesn't he look like a young John Cleese there?
Yeah, he does.
He's like a Monty Python character. Okay. Jordan Carberry is his name. He got home Monday night. He's a park ranger out in British Columbia. Also a wild lover of wildlife, in particular bears. So he got home one night, saw some bears in his headlights as he got in the driveway. And as he drove up, scared the bears away, they took off, went ahead, went in his house. Woke up the next morning about 5 o'clock, saw something moving outside. So he said, let me grab my phone and go outside and see what's crawling around in the trees. So he goes outside, he sees some grizzly bears in a cherry tree. So he decides he's gonna go closer. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, it's still dusk, you know, he can't see real well, so he wants to get closer so he can get some pictures. But he didn't realize that they were cubs.
Oh no.
One of the branch broke, and the bear falls out of the tree and crashes to the ground. And in the corner of his eye, he sees Mama Bear hauling ass to kick his ass. Okay. It gets better. So he turns, he tried to get back to the house, but he was 40 feet away from the house already. So all of a sudden, the bear tackles him, wraps the jaws around his head, picks him up, starts carrying him off and drops him. So grabs him by his thigh, starts dragging him off again. So in his training, he was taught to, in defense against a bear, to lay down with the feet towards the bear and just kick the shit out of it. So he starts kicking the bear in the face as hard as he could, and finally he gets up. So he decides he's going to go ahead and fight this bear as a true tactician of the boxing arts, as a pugilist. So he says that she moved like a prize fighter. He swung, the bear ducked its head, and he missed. Okay, so he swings again, she moves the other way, ducks, and he misses. And that's when she ducked away from that, when he realized he could make it to the house, hauled ass, took off running to the house. It is hilarious, dude. So he gets in his house, he left his phone outside, he dropped it, but it didn't matter because he has no cell phone service at his house anyway. He has no landline, so he had to get to the car, drive himself to the hospital with his scalp hanging off his head and his right butt cheek eaten up by the bear.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it was a 10-minute drive to the hospital to try to keep himself from passing out, but he made it. And, isn't that funny?
Dude.
He said the bear was like a prize fighter. I'm picturing this bear just, You know, in a southpaw stance.
Like Bear's like, oh, you want to go? Is that what we're doing?
You drop my baby out of tree and you want to swing at me?
Yeah. Jeez.
And this whole time, realize that the guy that's doing all this looks like a young John Cleese.
Yeah.
So just think about that for a second.
Oh, man.
That's a cool story. With Bear's attack.
I mean, poor guy, but dude, bears are no joke, dude.
This is a grizzly bear,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, they're not nice.
With three babies that she's protecting.
He's lucky he survived.
Oh, yeah. His pugilist tendencies saved his life. There's no way I could see myself squaring up to a bear to fight it.
I mean, so I've read stories because I used to obsessively read about sharks, and I read this story about this guy who was a spearfisher, and he had a bag of fish, you know, that he caught, and he got attacked by a shark, and it was a relatively big one. I think it was a great white, but it swung up and it grabbed him by the fish bag and dragged him. It was dragging him down, and so he's trying to undo himself from the thing, and then the shark decided it's going to go for bigger game. So the shark let go of the fish bag and bit him. So it bit the arm that he had with his knife in it, and so he's sitting there like basically with one foot and his other arm trying to get his arm out of the mouth of the shark, and it's getting all cut up, and the shark's like
right
shaking
sawing through him. Yeah,
so he pulls his knife hand out and his other hand slides in and the shark clamps down, so at least he's got his knife, starts stabbing the shark in the eye. The shark's just not giving up. He gets his other arm out and he's starting to lose blood, and the shark's still like coming at him, so he cuts his fish bag off and the shark goes after that, and he goes for the surface, gives himself the bends. And I think he ended up either, I don't think he lost an arm, but he, like, it was scarred up. I mean, he's messed up for life. But it's like, what's the first thing you think of? Let's stick my hand in the shark's mouth, you know, like, let's start punching the shark, and like, I've got a knife, stab it. But instead he like swung, he like punched the shark, and the shark's like, nope. But what do? I mean, you only have so many moments to figure out what you're going to do in that moment,
right?
You know, it's like, oh shit.
I think I told you this story before, but I used to go frogging with a buddy of mine. I was from Lake Arthur, Louisiana. I worked with him offshore, and he also went alligator hunting in September every year. So when alligator season is in September in Louisiana, which when you get your tags and everything, and so he asked me if I wanted to go one night. It's like, yeah. Well, this guy was country to the nth power, all right, just good old boy. He didn't use a gun, he used a knife. And what he would do is, we'd spotlight certain size alligators, and we'd kind of creep the little John boat up on the side of him, and he would roll on top, put one arm around the neck, and he'd cut him, he'd gut him, and kill him right there in the water. We're kind of drunk, and we're going around in the boat, and we're looking, I think we had killed one, and we're looking for another one. It was so funny, because we see this one that was kind of deceptive, because it looked like it was a small one. Next thing I know, he rolls out of the boat. This alligator starts death rolling. And every time he comes up from air, he goes, "It's a big one!" And then he goes back under and he goes, "I don't know if I can get him!" And he goes back under. He's like, "Help!" And he goes back under. And dude, I was laughing my ass off, right? It took about 5-10 minutes and he finally was able to kill it. But it was the funniest shit, because he'd go under. Then when he popped back up, he'd holler something. Like, I can't shoot it. You're on top of it, dude. Right.
Did you see the video? It kind of viral a week or so ago. There's two guys swimming, and a alligator comes up. I don't know where they are. They're in South America somewhere. The gator starts coming at them. So guy number one, he scrambles and he gets out of the water onto
the
bank.
The guy that does the elbow drop.
Yeah, he's like,
I question the validity of that video.
But he's like reaching for his friend, and the gators come in, and his friend like slips and goes back into the water, and the gator keeps coming, so he jumps up and just like nails him.
Yeah.
And it's like, the meme was like, how good of friends do you have? Because he's just like, elbow drops, and like totally just like wrestling move on this gator. Just like, would that actually work? I don't know. But I question the validity too, but
yeah, it's a good video.
It's something. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with some cool books for you to read.
It lives 50 feet beneath the streets. It weighs over 2,000 pounds. It's killed 5 people already. And it's about to break out. Alligator, rated R.
Starts Friday at theaters and drive-ins throughout Sacramento, Stockton, and Modesto.
All right, so now's this time of year where it's time to kick back in cold AC. You mentioned the beach earlier. It's hard to read on the beach. It's warm out there.
If you got a nice umbrella with the sea breeze blowing, it's not too bad.
True, true, true.
You know, first we could talk about there's this book by this guy that's been referred to as the John Holmes of the literary world.
That was a rather shocking review. Like, I probably know the person who wrote that, but I can't for the life
of me. You can't figure out who it was.
But, yeah, I'm sitting there reading reviews because we did a bunch of advance copies. And, you know, you get this is how people are. We had 500 advance copies, which was links to the Kindle version, mm-hmm. in return for reviews. And then every author, so there's 22 authors, every author had like another 100. So we're talking about almost 1,000 copies of the book in trade for a review. And every one of them was claimed, and we've got 16 reviews on Amazon.
Liars.
Yeah, right? Like, now, to be fair, maybe they haven't finished reading it yet, but still. Yep. But that's apparently the way it works. And like with us, we got, you know, 1,000 Twitter followers. We've got a few hundred Facebook followers. We got people who comment on, like, well, they text me or send me an email and tell me about, like, what they like about the show. But we've got, like, 3 reviews on it on iTunes.
Yeah, I think we're up to 5.
Maybe. which is, it's bizarre because, you know, I saw...
It takes time.
Not to click a star.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, now... On the flip side of that, to be fair, you know, things like Amazon or whatever, it's like if you want to click a review, you can't just do it. You have to like create a username and a password, and jump through all the hoops, and it asks you who you know and why you know them and all that stuff. So sometimes it is kind of a bitch to, especially like with our computer at home, like my wife is primarily the one who uses Amazon, so it's. You know, for me to log in under my own name and stuff, it's a different sort of thing. But still, those numbers are... But, yeah, so I had my anthology book come out July 1st. When it peaked, we were number 1 in occult. We were number 3 in horror stories. And the 2 ahead of me were... And I say me, there's, again, 22 writers in the book. But I consider it my book because I'm in it. There's 2 ahead of me. One was Edgar Allan Poe, and the other was Neil Gaiman for short story anthologies, mm-hmm. which, you know, short horror stories. But we were number 1, number 2, and number 3 in a couple of different categories. Out of the 6.5 million books on Amazon, we peaked at 3,400, which is not bad.
No, not at all.
For an indie press. And the reviews so far have been pretty good.
Yeah.
And a lot of the negative stuff on reviews, what happened was the initial release, the first like 24 hours of release, there were some formatting issues and some editor's notes inside of the download. So these issues were not in the print version. And Amazon actually corrected the formatting because they apparently, I'm not sure whose fault it was, whether it was the editor or whether it was Amazon. But the book that was released was the prior version. Like okay.
It wasn't the final version.
It was not the final version. But they got the final version out, and Amazon's replaced all of those. So that should be all fixed. But the Trees Have Eyes horror anthology. I've got 2 stories comprised of about 62 pages in the book. And reviews have been good. Sales have been awesome. And it's my first paid gig. I think I make about 3 cents per ish per copy, so not bad.
and, you're a professional author.
I'm a professional author. There we go. So But yeah, it's summer reading time. You know, harken back to, there was a period of my life, probably my somewhere between my junior and senior year of high school. I used to just lay on my bed and read books all day until I had to go to work. You know, read book after book after book. So we're going to talk about a few of those and a few, you know, some good finds. And after you're done reading The Trees Have Eyes and giving it a review on Amazon, please do the review. But yeah, so somebody left a review and said William Stewart is the John Holmes of is the literary John Holmes. So and that's the coolest review there so far. So, out of 16 of them, it's the one that like
stands out.
Yeah. So whoever that was, here's to you. Thank you for that. So what's one of your favorite books? What's something good to read whenever you're on the beach or you're in cold AC and you're just ready to kick
you,
back?
You usually can't go wrong with the Stephen King anthology. That's usually a quick go-to, whether it be Different Seasons or Skeleton Crew. Any of those are always good if you haven't picked it up already.
Stephen King's going to land on everybody's list. I was... I read most Stephen King books up until right after Misery, where it seemed like after that, for a while, he was writing screenplays for Kathy Bates to play, which she did.
Yeah.
But so I didn't read several of his books, and then kind of just went in a different direction. But yeah, the one I have written down for a good summer reading is The Shining. And to which you go, The Shining, that's a winter book.
It's still a good reading.
But what's funny is, and you'll stump people if you happen to run a horror website or social media, because there's some Photoshops, and you throw it out there, and you say, what's wrong with this picture? And it has a picture of that picture of Jack Nicholson in the Overlook at the party.
Mm-hmm.
And he's at the front, you know. And,
yeah.
And it'll say, you know, New Year's Eve. And you say, what's the problem with this picture? The problem is there ain't no party happening on New Year's Eve. They're closed for the winter.
Yeah.
That was the 4th of July party in the Overlook. And that's the party that's being had perpetually inside of the Overlook.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, all of the bad stuff, all of the throwback stuff, all of the history all happens in the summer. And
the store... People aren't there during the winter.
Right. So that is a really good one. And then I wrote down, too, for an anthology with Skeleton Crew.
Skeleton Crew, what I love about Skeleton Crew is the stories are short enough to where you can read that whole book in one sitting.
Yeah.
Because it changes gears. It keeps you into it. You finish one and you're ready to get into the next one. It's not like it's a long, drawn-out story that you got to take in bites.
Or if it's not, if you read a story, you can read a standalone story and walk away and nothing's lost.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, you know, Creepshow 2, The Raft. That story is in Skeleton Crew. Yep. That's another good summer story. You know, it's a bunch of kids out at the lake.
The one, I can't remember the name of it, but the guy that gets stranded on the desert island, the doctor, with all the heroin.
Right.
That's another good...
I think that's Survivor Type?
Yes. Yes. Survivor Type.
And, you know, you have Word Processor of the Gods.
Yes.
Which was turned into a Tales from the Dark Side. Mm-hmm. You have The Mist, which is pure classic. And all of these are short stories. And a lot of people don't realize how many of King's short stories were made into movies. Like, The Mist is a relatively... That's a novella. It's a relatively long story compared to...
Stand By Me was also a novella.
Well, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
The Mangler. So many of them.
Pupil.
Which is in...
Which you can't find anymore.
Yeah.
It's in Different Seasons, yeah.
Yeah. The Bachman books has The Running Man, The Long Walk, which is still one of the most haunting stories I've ever read. It's not in print anymore because it's about a school shooting, but a story called Rage. So if you can find an early edition, it's horrifying. But so many of them. You know, Stephen King's great for either long books or short books, either way. You know, Cycle of the Werewolf.
Yeah.
Somebody was posting the other day. It's like, oh, you know, Silver Bullet was a good movie, but Cycle of the Werewolf was a really scary book. To which I commented, well, if you have King's words and Bernie Wrightson's art together in one volume, it's damn near impossible to make a movie that good.
Yeah.
You know, like, you did the best you can. You put Gary Busey in it. But yeah, I mean, Stephen King has a long history of books and movies and screenplays and short stories and everything. You really can't go wrong. But I would say that if you haven't read it before, The Shining. The Shining is one of those that I think everybody knows the movie, and a lot of them know the Kubrick movie, but a lot of them haven't actually read the book. The book's a lot scarier than either one of those things. Mm-hmm. So when that rickety old elevator opens, whenever the... One of the scariest parts of The Shining is before Jack goes completely bonkers, before he's lost it. And he holds on to it pretty good through most of the movie. Again, kicking back to like last week's Fresh Eyes, where you're looking at something from a different, you know, like the point of view, like, I've never seen it, I don't know what I'm looking at, I'm just going to watch it. And one of the scariest parts of The Shining is, for a significant part of the book, they think somebody's in the hotel with them. Mm-hmm. A living person is hiding out in one of the rooms.
Yeah.
And that's almost scarier than the ghosts, because what's that, right? So there's different layers of fear in The Shining that really can get to you. It's definitely worth a read if you've never done it before. We mentioned, I was hoping that our book would knock Neil Gaiman down. Not because I don't love Neil Gaiman, but because that would be awesome to be able to say we did that. But if you've never read the Graveyard book or Good Omens by Neil Gaiman, Good Omens is a fun romp. It's Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, and it's more or less a comedy, but it's an apocalyptic comedy. So if you like apocalyptic stories, it's apocalyptic, religious, and satirical. Mm-hmm. And the story of Good Omens is basically, it's the apocalypse, it's the end of the world, the biblical apocalypse, and you've got an angel and a demon, and their job has kind of been to just kind of oversee humanity. And then whenever the signs are right, whenever it's time for the prophecies to come true, they're supposed to facilitate the end of the world. But both of them have kind of come to actually like the world, and they don't want to see it end, so they kind of fudge it.
Okay.
And then there's different things that happen, and it, you know, like, there's supposed to be a satanic cult that raises the Antichrist, but they switch the babies in the hospital, so the actual Antichrist is raised by good parents.
Okay.
And the satanic cult raises this other kid who's just normal, and they can't figure out why he's not expressing his powers.
Yeah.
You know, they release this, it's the Hellhound, it's supposed to be a demon, and whenever it reveals itself, whatever the Antichrist calls this thing, that will be its form. So if he calls it, you know, Godzilla, it will rain down fire on cities. But he can't really talk well yet, so when the little dog thing runs up to him, he calls it a puppy or a doggy, and it turns into a dog with a dog's mentality. Uh-huh. It becomes the dog and just completely fizzles into the background. It's completely neutered. Mm-hmm. And just things like that, just watching the apocalypse as it's supposed to occur not happen the way it should.
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's really good. Quick read. Graveyard book is another one. If you've never read it, it's more of a children's story, but it's fucking scary. So little boy's parents are killed, so he gets hidden in the cemetery, and he's raised by ghosts. And just all of his little adventures and stuff living in the cemetery. Our friend from Scary Dad and Nerdfest and Jay Mazur, she's got a new book out called Crone.
Yeah.
I read it as a beta reader, and I've reread parts of it since it's come out. It's pretty flawless. I mean, it's a damn good book, and it's, she has this way of kind of creating atmosphere that, like, really kind of make you feel creepy as you're moving through your house. So it's, if you're If you're into horror or you're into a good read, I'll post the link, but Crone was a damn good story. And it's not very long. It's only maybe a couple hundred pages at most. So you should check that out. I believe it's your turn.
I'll jump in. I'll talk about this book all the time, but I'll go ahead and jump in. If you have never read Weave World by Clive Barker, I highly recommend it. Weave World is really three books in one. It's set up in three different parts. We were talking earlier about character development and how just making characters that you care about and you want to find out what happens with them. Weave World is very good with it. You know, the first part is an introduction to the protagonist. The group of protagonists. There's several characters that you end up meeting and getting to know, and they all have their attributes, and you kind of get a glimpse of the antagonist. And the second part of the book is where it gets really scary, because you learn a lot about the antagonists, who are just beyond creepy. It really brings the fear factor into it, and how they mesh with the protagonist. And of course, the final part of the book is just bringing all that together in the end. And it's a great book. It's lots of ups and downs and feelings of dread at one point, not thinking that, you know, it's going to end the way it ends. And that book is one that I highly, highly recommend, dude.
Awesome.
Just his ability to it starts off as a fantasy and then turns into horror really, really quick and then comes back into fantasy, and just it's able to bring those two worlds together really well.
There's a lot of fantastical stuff that is really good at being scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people think fantasy, a lot of times they think, oh, you know, Tolkien or, you know, Terry Brooks. And, you know, every now and then you'll have a monster, you know, looks like he ought to be in Army of Darkness or something, but they're not really terrifying.
Right.
You know, but good fantasy can be pretty horrific if it's done well.
Right. Well, when you look at the history of things like fairies, you know, people think of fairies, they think of good fairies. Mm-hmm. There were evil fairies, too, in old lore. Well, fairies could be bad.
Well, they were primarily bad.
Yeah. They liked to play jokes on people, and they liked, they terrorized people.
Mm-hmm.
They were scary as hell. So fantasy could be pretty scary.
Yeah, I think a lot of fantasy was neutered by Disney trying to make it, you know, palpable, you know, palatable for children. And it's why I find it, people find it humorous whenever, like, religious people flip out over something like Harry Potter, and they're like, oh, you know, that's glorifying witchcraft. And yeah, there is something to be said for overreacting. But the reality is that historically, this has not been something you wanted to mess with.
Black magic.
It's stuff that, you know, at best, got you ostracized and possibly executed. You know, if the demons or the fairies or the witches or whatever, if none of it exists and all it is, you know, herbal mat, you know, called magic, but it's just herbal remedies, you'd still get executed by believers. If it is what it's purported to be and you are dealing with the devil, that's pretty bad too.
Yeah.
So it's probably best to be left alone, and probably not best to be glorified, you know, towards your children.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, you know, I think that kids shouldn't play with, you know, Peter Pan or something. I'm talking in general terms. When religious groups freak out about something being portrayed positively, it's kind of rooted in a historical fear for a reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm always a little bit more sympathetic, especially we haven't talked about it in a long time, but listening to the Lore podcast, when he talks about how, like, when you thought a witch was going to ruin your crops, to us, we're like, oh, so your backyard garden wilts and you're going to go kill somebody over it.
That's a livelihood you're talking about.
That's life.
Yeah.
That means you're going
life
to...
life or death.
Yeah. When your cow dies, you're over with. You're done. Dead. Possibly starving, you know? So people took it serious as a heart attack back then. So, but yeah, speaking of witches, the best of the series, Anne Rice wrote wrote The Interview with the Vampire books, mm-hmm. which I would say that those are more winter books. You'd certainly want to read those more in the fall. They have that more creep factor.
Yeah.
But The Witching Hour.
Yeah.
Witching Hour takes place over several years and obviously through multiple seasons. But some of the primary scenes are in summer in New Orleans, historically. So back in the day and even now, I think the main part of the story is in the summertime in New Orleans. So, you know, you have a summer funeral where you have where you're out and everybody's wearing their itchy, like the women are wearing their itchy dresses and there's mosquitoes and everything's sweating and you've got Kate Jasmine blooming and the smell of the flowers is intoxicating and everybody's just a little bit off because of the heat and the humidity yeah. and the bugs. And it just really, I mean, she describes, God, dude, Anne Rice will describe wood grain. you don't really realize she's doing it until you've read 100 pages and you haven't moved past, like, two steps. The character's still walking down the street. And you're like, but it draws you in such a way, and it's very well written.
Makes it easy to read. Yeah.
Yeah. But then whenever you're done, you don't realize that you've been living in this world. And you've been living in this world so thoroughly that the first time I ever went to New Orleans, I knew where I was. I'd never been there before, but I knew buildings by the way that
the
descriptions in my head. And it is a phenomenal book. The two sequels are not as great. I think the first one was supposed to be like two books. And then the third one was supposed to finish it, but then something happened and she ended up... The first one's a really long book. It takes about 120 pages to get into, but if you get into it, it'll change your life. It'll really make...
I got the trilogy somewhere around here.
It's incredible. So my wife, who's a big reader, reread it recently, and she's just like, man, this is long. So I'm not going to say it ain't long, but it's
It's worth it.
It's worth it. It's certainly worth it. The first one, Witching Hour, is definitely worth it. What's next? What you got?
I wasn't totally prepared for this one, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, I can keep going.
Keep going.
You got Terry Brooks, writes fantasy. He wrote a series. It's called the Magic Kingdom for Sale series, or it's called the Magic Kingdom of Landover series. And it's pretty light. It's good summer reading. It's a series, I think, of like five books. None of them are more than like maybe 200, 220, maybe 220, like, of the pages. But essentially what happens is this guy, it's kind of one of those cool things, kind of like hitting a kick-ass haul at Goodwill or something. This guy finds in a like kind of like the Macy's or the Sears catalog, or it's like a Nordstrom catalog, a thing, Magic Kingdom for sale, $1 million. And I think like his wife and child had died in a car accident, so he's an attorney, he's wealthy, he's got money, but he's, you know, just kind of being an alcoholic and got nothing much to live for. He notices this, he realizes it's impossible, but he's like, screw it. He calls the number and it turns out to be real. So he drives out, you know, they give him the little thing and he drives out and he goes through a little portal and he lands in the Kingdom of Landover, which is like an alternate universe. Mm-hmm. But he's the king, he's the heir, he holds the amulet. But it's dying, it's falling apart. So he has to figure out how to put it back together. And over the series of the books, you know, they've got a kick-ass dragon, this really awesome witch, these bad barons and shit, stuff like that. So, just over and over and over again, it's really good. So that one comes highly recommended. Of course, there's lots and lots of comic series that are good.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, you know, right now, I'm currently rereading all the Preacher graphic novels. I don't want to break open the actual comic books. I've been picking up the graphic novels.
Yeah.
And that's an excellent one to pick up and jump into. What I've always loved about Preacher is that it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no more Preacher books that come out. The story actually had an ending. So that pick up the first six graphic novels, and you'll enjoy them. You know, you can jump right into it and get into the world of Jesse Custer.
They've got the series was renewed. Lucifer got canceled, but
oh yeah, yeah, Preacher's still on the television show itself, but the comic book series itself is what ended. But yeah, yeah, they just started season three 4 weeks ago. So I've seen the first episode. It was kick ass, man. And what I love about it is right now he's in Angelville, which if you read the comic books, Angelville comes a little bit earlier than it came in the television show, but his roots are in Louisiana. And he has a really evil, sadistic grandmother that raised him. And he has to go back to ask her for help for some stuff. And it's the grandmother has these two henchmen that work for her. And it's the show does such an incredible job of following the comic books.
That's good. I haven't seen the show.
They've done an excellent job with it, man.
Yeah, Arsface?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Arsface is in it. He's been in it since the first season. The second season, he was in hell, of course, where he befriended Adolf Hitler and everything. And him and Hitler were able to escape from hell and come back. So he hasn't. I haven't seen the episode where he's back on season three, but from some of the trailers I've seen, Hitler's working in a yogurt shop. There's a little name tag that says Adolf.
Wow.
But yeah, Preacher is definitely one that I would recommend that you could jump into. And like I said, really enjoy it. Really get into it.
Awesome. Well, and the final one I was going to mention, just because it's the summer movie, the summer blockbuster, if you've never read the book Jaws, it's got some boring moments, but it really will enhance your movie watching experience.
Yeah. That's the thing.
You know, there's a little bit of difference. Not to spoil it, but, you know, Hooper doesn't survive. and his death is pretty spectacular. It's good stuff. So, but yeah, Jaws is a good one to, you know, that spurred all of the summer movies, and it's a great summer reading, and, you know, just leaving it on a high note. You go out and find yourself, you can probably find an old copy, like an old Bantam edition.
Now, see it at Pat Price Books often.
Yeah. You can probably get an old Bantam edition for a couple bucks, you know, sit on the beach and read a book with a shark on the cover. But with that, man, it's getting a little bit warm. The summer heat is just starting to, like, stress me out here. So we're going to go ahead and call it a day, call it a night, call it a summertime. We still got a few weeks left. Haunted Halloween show, September 29th. It's coming. So there should be some information up on the website about admissions, and we should have our panels figured out by now. So if you're interested, hit me up on the website, and we'll talk to you later.
Later.
That you do mean more. know the